T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Are you ready?
It's Afternoons with OMF.
A lot of talk going on these days about who is the greatest ever.
Why does Brady get up and work this hard? Because he still has doubters.
Aaron Rodgers can make throws that Tom Brady, when he's laying next to his gorgeous wife, Giselle,
I love you,
can't even dream of making.
I've never played against Tom Brady, so I'm glad he's our quarterback. He's a great quarterback.
Y'all think Tom Brady is a better quarterback? You are absolutely out of all of your mind.
I got to go with Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers is the standard.
Aaron Rodgers, in terms of checking every box, seems to check them better than Tom Brady does.
I think Rodgers could have been Rodgers anywhere.
Just what he's done as a quarterback is, I think it's inspiring. He throws some of the best incompletions I've ever seen.
Right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
They're setting you up. The national media is setting you up for what they regard as a statement game Sunday night in Foxborough. 8:20 the kickoff. It's a statement game.
I tell you what, this isn't the Super Bowl. This isn't the Super Bowl. This is not for all the marbles.
It is for something.
What is it for?
The perception that Aaron Rodgers is better than Tom Brady. If Green Bay comes in here and wins this game on Sunday night, what do you think people are going to be saying Monday?
Well, first of all, the people who want Aaron Rodgers to be considered the best of all time, even though he isn't and he doesn't have the resume to prove it, they're going to say, well, see, I told you. There's going to be a lot. See, I told you so. That the world, it's filled with these Aaron Rodgers is the guy. Aaron Rodgers is a better athlete. Aaron Rodgers can throw up tighter spiral. Okay, no, he can't. Okay, he's not. Brady is the best quarterback. Okay, and don't give me this, okay, Aaron Rodgers is more talented. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. But there's not even, it's not even close.
I don't even understand how this really came about. Like, I'm just saying, like, it was Brady,
of course you do,
and it was Peyton Manning. No, I understand what they're pushing.
Spygate,
but it's not even a discussion. I mean, Brady Manning, he ended that, so they had to try to find someone else. Okay, let's go try to find the next young thing. No, let's go try to find a 36-year-old who hasn't won maybe as much as he probably should have in his career, who's a great fantasy football quarterback, who is a very talented and athletic quarterback who's very good in his own right, the greatest of all time. Discussion is over. You want to talk about 2018? Who's the best quarterback now? Well, we can maybe have that discussion. Who'll be the next quarterback next year? That's fine, because I tell you what, there's going to be a lot more quarterbacks other than Brady and Rodgers that we talk about.
Well, plus Rodgers is 35, so he's running out of time.
Well, I'm just saying, like, moving forward, the next 5 years, are either one of these guys in the top five 5 years from now?
No.
All right, so there's other guys that we can mention. So when we're discussing these two, I don't know how else you discuss it other than, like, their careers. Rodgers is 36 years old, and is underachieved. It's not even a discussion. I don't understand how you can talk about
this. He's got one Super Bowl, right?
They're pushing this more than anything I've ever seen.
It's been to one Super Bowl.
You're having Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan doing like a public service announcement, right, to pub this game. And Ryan, I want you to play it in its entirety from beginning to end for me, because I was sitting there listening to it. I'm like, man, Michael Jordan, what are you doing, man? Like,
a lot of talk going on these days about who is the greatest ever, about who has the titles, the raw talent, the most clutch moments. I get it. It's a tough call.
It isn't.
I mean, even the jersey numbers are the same. But maybe the best way to settle this debate is to play it out head to head. I'll watch that.
That's ridiculous.
Okay, I like the music, though. I tell you what, ESPN,
this is why it's so stupid. Do you think?
Hey,
Mike,
before you say
do you
something,
think Michael, go ahead.
Before you say something really, like, impactful,
yeah.
Can you, like, somehow cue Ryan and so he plays this music right before you say it?
It's more impactful.
See? I don't care whatever you say.
Wait a minute. Hold on. How about the music and Ray Lewis whispering? It's really impactful.
Yeah, that's all you have to do.
Honestly, I mean, you look at, like, remember, like, the 1 year, I was trying to figure out what it was. It was 2011, when they were 14-2. The year you lost to the Giants. You lost to the Giants because Aaron Rodgers choked in that first round against the Giants.
Right.
They got their doors blown out. He had a quarterback rating of 78. He was not good. I mean, he had a bad game at home, favored against the New York Giant team. 37-20. That's only because they scored late to make it even that close. So, I mean, you can sit there, well, he hasn't had the teams. That year he did. That year everybody was talking about Brady versus Rodgers. And what happened? Like, he didn't play well. Like, you can't just sit there and forget about what this guy's done in the past. He's a great quarterback. He's the second best quarterback of this time period. There's no question.
But Sunday night
won't
change.
But there's such a gap between he and Brady right now and what they've achieved in their careers that it's actually laughable that people like Shannon Sharp can say, if you think Brady's been better than Rodgers, you're crazy.
Sunday night
like,
is not going to.
What are we talking about?
Sunday night will not change anything.
Boom! No.
If Tom Brady has a tough game on Sunday night and Aaron Rodgers is phenomenal, it won't change. You have to look at the entire resume. You were just talking about it. 16 seasons for Tom Brady, right?
I don't care.
Aaron Rodgers has had 10. Playoffs for Tom Brady, 15 of those 16 seasons. That's 94%. Rodgers, 8 out of 10, 80%. Divisional finals, 87.5% for Tom Brady, 60% for Aaron Rodgers. Conference finals, this is where we separate the boys from the men, right? In your conference finals, 16 years, Tom Brady, 12, 75%. Aaron Rodgers in his 10 years, only 3 conference finals, 30%. Now, you want to talk Super Bowl?
Sure.
8 out of 16 for Tom Brady, 50%.
Amazing.
Aaron Rodgers,
that's insane.
One Super Bowl appearance is in his
though,
entire
so
career. And victories, he won his one.
Yeah.
But that's still 1 out of 10 years. That's 10%. Tom Brady's won 5 in the 16 years he played in the league. 31%.
But you know what an Aaron Rodgers, an Aaron Rodgers supporter would say? Well, you know what? Coaching, personnel, you know, no fan support.
No, look at Belichick. Again, it's Belichick.
Oh, yeah. Tom has Bill. So, you know, that's like, you know, that's an advantage. I mean, McCarthy, come on. Like, he's good, but he's not Tom. He's not Bill Belichick. Even those stats, it's laughable. Really, when you really sit back and look at the stats, you want to, hey, Mike, you want to talk about clutch moments? Brady has more. Brady has more clutch moments in bigger games and for a longer period
of
time.
It's not even close.
So you can sell it to me. Listen, I'm going to watch anyways. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to play great. He's going to have a big time game.
He's going to
throw because their defense cannot stop them. That's where it's different. So they can't. So he's going to put 350 yards, maybe 400 yards passing. He's going to look great. He's going to run all over the place because that's what quarterbacks do to this defense.
Well, the other thing you can look at, Christian, is you can look at all the records where Brady leads in all of these lifetime categories. It's ridiculous. But here's what I think it comes down to. If you look at Tom Brady, you sit there and say, well, it's not real athletic. And really, that's not a great, you know, athletic body. He doesn't run at all. Matter of fact, if you take all 32 starting quarterbacks and maybe the 32 backups, Tom Brady may be the least likely to actually be able to run, correct? So he doesn't have that skill. But can he throw? Does he have great eye and coordination? Does he process going from receiver to the next one and see the entire field? He does all of that, and that's what makes him great. All of that, and as I like to say, phenomenal mobility in a 16 by 16 foot square. What does Rodgers have, though? Rodgers is more artistic. It looks better. It looks better.
That's a good way of explaining it.
It looks better.
It looks like a ballet dancer.
Exactly.
See, now it makes sense. I hear the music.
More athletic, more artistic. But I think the media people look at it and they say, I just want to watch Rodgers. Luke pointed this out weeks ago when he came back in that game against San Francisco at the end, and everybody the next day said, that's it. Rodgers is the greatest. Wait a minute.
Rodgers!
He sucked in the first half. You're playing the San Francisco 49ers without their starting quarterback.
He's been a different quarterback in the first half than he has been in the second. And that's why he looks, you know, he's having great second halves. But one of the reasons why they've been trailing a lot is because he hasn't been good in the first half.
Yeah, but that's why it's traumatic. Again,
this turns into trashing Aaron Rodgers, right? Because you shouldn't trash Aaron Rodgers.
But none of us are doing that.
No, he's in this 10-year span.
He's great.
Span,
he's a Hall of Famer.
He's the second best quarterback.
Yes.
You know, in the NFL, you know, would I put him ahead of Drew Brees? Yes. Yeah, I would. I'd put Drew Brees right behind him as well.
See, I don't even
know. So are we trashing him? No.
He sucks.
There is, you can't, I mean, I understand why people look at Aaron Rodgers and say, wow, because there's more wow moments, as you guys pointed out. As Teddy said yesterday, it's street ball. Like I told you, like even like beginning of the year, like he never, ever just drops back and throws to the first look. You never ever, you know, that's first look, second look, run around, spin, then take off, and then throw it in a run. Everyone's like, wow, look at what he can do. Okay, did he pass up the first throw? I don't know. I don't know the all 22s, but it's just, he's a great player. There's no question. He's a very talented quarterback. But the discussion of greatest of all time, that thing is so over. It is so over. There might be a kid.
It's not like, with these
But I'm
people.
Just saying, like, it might be a kid. Like, we were talking about Russell Wilson. Let's see. The career started off pretty good. Let's see if he can win three or four. Let's see if he can keep doing it.
Having a good year.
I'm just saying, maybe this kid, Pat Mahomes, has been Super Bowl as a rookie. And then, you know, it goes from there. Carson Wentz, I don't know. Jared Goff rattles off four in the next 8 years. Whatever. But it's nobody right now that's aged in this game. If anything, it's got to be a kid. Because Aaron Rodgers made a good bid. Made a good, you know, bid at it. But I'm sorry. He failed. There's a lot of games. You can go look at some, you mentioned NFC title games, you know, against Seattle, the year the Patriots beat Seattle. That year, well, his performance in that game was like 60 quarterback rating. You know, Arizona a couple years before that, or the year after that, I think, in the semifinal in the NFC. He hasn't performed well. We forget about those, though. And now all of a sudden here on Sunday night, we want to sit there and say, if he wins.
Because they love the drama at the end.
Greatest of all time.
But the drama at the end
greatest
is what
that
season.
Night, maybe.
In their mind, go look it up and look at fourth quarter comebacks. Okay, by Tom Brady in his career. Okay, phenomenal, off the charts. But people would tell you right now, who would you rather have at the end of a game? They would tell you Aaron Rodgers. Based on the fact that there have been some dramatic game-winning plays at the end that they remember, including
like
that San Francisco 49er game.
Okay, so I hear you. And so one of my favorite shows, Get Up or Get Down.
Yeah.
Okay, so they had...
Really? You really watch that show?
Yeah, every now and then. It's like background noise. Right. Yeah. So who was it? Marcus Spears. Right? He was on. And so they're having this debate, and I guess he drew the short straw, and he had to try to convince people why Aaron Rodgers was better than Tom Brady. It made no sense.
When it comes to talent, Aaron Rodgers is definitely the most talented quarterback that we've seen in the NFL. If you had a board based on what everybody has done, individually, and you look at skill set, you look at the way they play, you're going to take Aaron Rodgers before you take any of those other guys. Championships, there's no conversation. Aaron Rodgers alluded to that. But when you talk about talent, a dude that literally changes the game, Aaron Rodgers changes the game.
Here's the one part of that I got a little tired of hearing. Okay, let me just run through a list of qualities you're looking for in a quarterback. Okay,
we're ready.
Leadership, dedication, intelligence, command of the offense, accuracy, arm strength, mental toughness, and physical toughness. Those are the things it requires to play quarterback. Tom Brady has all of those, and as much of all of those as anyone.
Greeny, did you just try to make a case that Brady is more talented than Aaron Rodgers?
I'm trying to make a case that Tom Brady does all the things you need a quarterback to do more than well enough and at a higher level than people tend to give him credit for. He is going to do this with essentially a total of one offensive teammate is going to wind up in the Hall of Fame.
Aaron Rodgers. Good. Thank you. Here's the thing. Are we going to sit there and just use talent? So, like, Aaron Rodgers is the most talented. First of all, explain it.
He's
the most talented quarterback. All right, if we're just going to talk about forget about, you know, this. They're all coming out in the draft, and you have no idea what these guys are going to turn into. Aaron Rodgers is going to test better than Tom Brady. He is. He's going to run faster. He may even throw better in shorts and t-shirts without any defense.
Combine picture.
But are we really going to sit here and say Aaron Rodgers is the most talented quarterback? The only thing Aaron Rodgers does better than Brady
is run.
Physically run. I'm not talking about escapability because Brady's got escapability.
Yeah, mobility. Here
okay,
we go.
Escapability. The ability to extend the play. Now, he does it differently than Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes.
Thank you.
He
You're finally with, coming around
no,
to my
forget
point.
It, please,
Thank you.
Stop it, okay?
Thank
What's
you.
The best case scenario for Brady Rodgers?
How do you even equate that? So this guy's faster. Okay, check mark. But this guy still stays alive.
But that's what they're using.
So he overcomes his deficiencies, which is straight line speed.
But when they say skill set, they're talking about his running ability. You just nailed it. There's no difference. And matter of fact, if you're talking about mobility, you can question the way I use the term or whatever. If you're talking about being elusive, Brady does it as well as Rodgers does it, but he does it differently. He does it within the pocket. He drops his shoulder here, there. Look at the sacks. Look at the number of sacks over the years. So Rodgers, they're looking at one thing. Rodgers' ability to run. That's it.
Does he throw better in the run? That's another one.
Well, sure. Okay. Because
Brady doesn't run.
Okay. He's got a faster 40. and he throws better on the run.
That's the only difference.
Yeah. So does that make him more athletic?
In their mind, it does.
That would be a yes, because when you're talking about talent and athletic ability, listen, Rodgers is better than him. That's fine. But we're not talking about two guys going in the street and like duking it out. We're talking about the quarterback position, specifically playing quarterback. Who is the most talented quarterback to ever play the game? And I'll give Greeny credit. He listed off a bunch of intangibles, right, that you can't measure with a stop clock or one of those NFL StatCast things in your pads.
Right.
So, okay, you still going to sit there and say Aaron Rodgers is the most talented quarterback? Give me some evidence other than just your bias.
But the bias is based, though, on what they see in the running ability, because that's how people judge athleticism. I used to argue this for years with Larry Bird. People say, Larry Bird's not athletic. He's smart. He's smarter than
because
everybody
else. He's a white guy.
Right. You can't be smarter than everybody else out there if they're athletic and go and have the type of career that he had. He had great eye-hand coordination, and he was able to move around that floor. Did he have A to B straight line speed? No. Was he able to move around? They're doing the same thing with Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers is an athlete. He can run. It looks better. When you're looking at it artistically, when you see Rodgers, it looks better. But production, who gets the job done better?
That's really all you care about.
I mean,
that's really all you care about.
I understand why we're talking about it, because people are talking. I don't even.
Are you hearing some of this stuff nationally?
It's like a waste of time. Like defending Tom Brady as the greatest of all time? Is that what we're doing right now?
Yes.
He won his fifth Super Bowl a couple years back. And the game that he had in that last loss.
He's the loat.
Talk about the weapons that he has had. He's got good ones now. And Gronk, like you just said, maybe one Hall of Famer. Different players in and out. Being able to do it year in, year out. Carrying defenses now for maybe the last, I don't know, 7-8 years, basically. Defenses aren't what they were back when you played, Christian. No. They were like, okay, we got legit defenses. It's situational defenses. They're not that good.
Well, the way
he's been carrying them, he's been carrying his defense a lot better than Aaron Rodgers because he's not getting it done. So, they haven't had great defenses in the last few years.
And both had great weapons, by the way. They both had great weapons.
It took Tom Brady not only just to tie Joe Montana as far as Super Bowls. Like, remember, even when he got his fourth Super Bowl, it was like, well, Joe Montana, is still the guy. I don't care what you say. I'm a Joe Montana 4-0. Guy. When he got his fifth, it was like, well, they kind of had no choice. Like, nobody wanted to give up on the Joe Montana. Not because Brady wasn't better. Just, they just didn't want to give it to him.
Well, we remember last year against Philly. It was like, remember, we always have this debate going into Super Bowl. It's like, what Super Bowl, what's this more important for? Is it more important for Bill? Is it more important for Tom? Like, who's it more important for? And last one, we felt like, not that important either one. Just adding on. Like, they've already done it. You know, like that Seattle one. It was important for everybody, right? The whole Spygate stuff. And then Atlanta was important because you wanted to get five, you know, and then you got it. And you were like, okay, this Philly one? Okay, I guess you could add on six, but there's really no debate anymore, right? I mean, the debates are over. Bill's one of the best of all time, and so Tom's the best of all time. This thing's over.
almost said it.
But now we're having a debate because of Sunday Night Football?
Yeah.
Really? One game?
There you go.
Then we're going to go? So if Rodgers shreds this Patriot defense and Brady has the type of game he had in the Super Bowl and they both go off, which I think they both could go off, so whoever wins the game makes them the better quarterback?
Yes, that will be the narrative on Monday. Absolutely will be the narrative
the other thing
nationally.
Is that football is like the worst sport to really compare
it's awful.
Who's better, because Aaron Rodgers will never physically go up against Brady. Like sprinters, boxers, in basketball, certain times, because you got to play offense and defense and go up and down the court. Hockey to a small degree. But otherwise, like, this is the worst example you could use as far as who's better than the other. Because you're going against not only another defense that plays a different scheme that may have, 10 guys hurt, a bunch of rookies and backups. Well, you know what? A scrub should be able to move the ball on a defense like that. So is your data really correct? What does it really say? Unless you're both going against the exact same defense under this in the same exact circumstances, you'll never know.
Yeah, what you can't
never
do.
Know. So, and then what if you do make all the right plays, but then your guys drop the ball? Well, what if it goes off their fingertips? Does that mean, oh, look, Tom Brady, terrible day of throwing? No, he put it right in his hand.
Well, look at the
guy dropped it.
Look at the two Super Bowls that he lost to the Giants. One was a bizarre catch on the side of a helmet because he led them downfield and they took the lead in the game. And the second one was another Manning way on the sideline, which was a phenomenal catch. Ironically, losses, Brady lost two Super Bowls because you're right, they don't play against each other, but to Eli Manning. And you were talking about how Green Bay got beat by the Giants. Eli Manning was that quarterback, beat them and prevented them from going to the Super Bowl because we were talking about the possibility that year of Green Bay and New England in the Super Bowl, and it never happened. But they're viewing Sunday night's game. Maybe they're just trying to drum it up.
Of course.
Whatever. But they're talking about this being a referendum on Sunday night's game. What are we talking about, Michael Jordan and everybody else?
I can't believe they got Michael Jordan to actually do this.
Yeah.
I can't believe they pulled him out and said, listen.
Saw Larry and Magic do stuff over the weekend, said, I got to get in on this.
And the fact that Jordan, you know, opens up this little montage. Like
the most clutch moment.
When he talks about, like, okay, it's finally time to figure out a lot of talk going on about who the greatest of all time is. No, not even close. Head to head. Okay, who's the most clutch? Listen, Mike, I don't know how much they paid you, because I know you don't need the money. But this discussion should be who's the greatest athlete of all time.
And because of
you, Michael Jordan, and Tom Brady. You want to start talking about best of all time as far as athletes go and a team sport? We can start having a debate, Michael Jordan versus Tom Brady.
So
that's the next debate.
Unfortunately for a talk show, all three of us agree that Tom Brady is by far the best, and I would think that any reasonable person out there would feel the same way.
But you
know what happens when we start talking about it. Nationally, they're going to sit there and say, what do you expect those talkers up in New England? They're all fanboys
up there. I feel like this was an argument. I feel like I'm going back to like 2012.
You are.
Because 2010, that was the year they won the Super Bowl.
You're talking about Peyton Manning argument.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like Aaron Rodgers won a Super Bowl, I believe, in 2010, right? February of 2011. 2011, he was the MVP of the league. He came back that following year, was outstanding again. He said, okay, here we go. You know, this kid right now is 26, 27 years old. He's already got a Super Bowl under his belt. He's an MVP. There's no question this guy is putting up ridiculous numbers. You know, he's going to win a few more Super Bowls, and we're going to have this discussion. Hasn't been to one since. Hasn't been to a Super Bowl. You know, so you look at it and say, okay, how do we judge guys anymore? Because we used to judge them, you know, on regular season. So if you sit there and say two guys are great in a regular season, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, what do we go to next? All right, well, let's go to championships.
I mean, five versus one.
Let's go to get into the AFC title game. Let's get into Super Bowl.
I want to go to the title game, the conference championship, 12-3. These numbers are going to the Super Bowl, 8-1. There's no argument.
Well, even
8-1. Getting to the Super Bowl, playing in the Super Bowl, leading your team to the Super Bowl. 8 for Brady, 1 for Rodgers, and we're going to look at a Week 9 game in the middle of an NFL season on Sunday night as the referendum for who's the best? Are you kidding me?
If Tom Brady isn't part of the equation, if he'd never played football, and Aaron Rodgers is the talented, greatest quarterback to ever play the game, and he only has one Super Bowl and three championship appearances.
Eli's got two.
You know what they're saying? You know what they should be saying? Oh, he underachieved. He's like, he left too much on the table. He was never the player that he should have been.
Oh,
he never accomplished enough. Because if you're that talented, and if you're that much better than everybody else, and you make everybody else around you better because you're a great quarterback, well, then you should be in a championship game more often than not. Every single year. You should never ever spend a season where you're not at least 9-7 and fighting for a playoff spot.
Well, you always said, the most important position in this league, we all know, is quarterback.
Can't win
more
without
so than it's ever been.
Right.
Ever been.
Unless you have Trent Dilfer.
So, you know, you should be able to take your team. You should be able to carry your team. I mean, you know, and that was one criticism of Peyton Manning. And you always sit there and say, well, you know, he hasn't had Tom Brady's defense. Okay, I'll give you that. Up to about 05, 03, 04, 05 in that range. But after that, I mean, since 07, and basically the Patriots sold their soul and said, screw it, we can't beat Aaron Rodgers. I mean, we can't beat Peyton Manning in 06. We're going to join him. And they started saying, okay, this is how the NFL is going. This is where it's headed. We're going to just score more than everybody else. We're going to score a ton. And defensively, hopefully make a stop or two. I would say for the last 10 years, this has been Tom Brady's show. And it's been years where the defense has been better. Year you got Tlaib, you brought in Revis, and it has been better. There's no question. But he still carried teams with bad defense. That team last year, sorry. We all know that was a bad defense. I don't care what the numbers said at the end of the year.
No.
That was a bad defense. Right. And look at the game. Look at the Super Bowl. So, I mean, he's got to do that a few times, doesn't he? Take an entire team with a bad defense on his shoulders a Super Bowl?
I've been arguing this point for a few years right now. Going back to your point, Christian, I think Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. I think he has underachieved. He is only 5.5 years younger than Tom Brady. Shouldn't he have taken over the top spot by now? Shouldn't he have taken it over last year when Tom Brady was the MVP? I mean, come on. He should have taken this thing over.
No, he
should be to more Super Bowls. He got to get lucky. A lot of things have to happen to win.
2010, 2011,
he's been to one Super Bowl.
He said, all right, this is going to turn right now, and this is going to be the guy. Forget about Manning. This is going to be the guy, right? And it never happened. Ryan, what was it? Shannon Sharp was another one, right? We love Shannon Sharp. Can we understand him? Did he say anything about this?
I'm ready for this game to start. Because I'm tired of these heads of state. Because everybody's being so diplomatic, Jenny. Oh, my goodness. It's amazing what he's done with the economy in his country. Stop it. We know this, Skip. Quarterbacks do not take shots at other quarterbacks publicly.
That's true.
But what we found out in Deflategate through some of Tom Brady's that got leaked, Peyton Manning is on his last leg. I'm going to play forever. Now, he would have never said that publicly, would he, Jenny?
Never.
But that's what he said on his text messages because it was red, Skip Bayless. So, for me, I believe that Aaron Rodgers would say, yeah, Tom is more accomplished. He has 5 Super Bowls. But if y'all think Tom Brady is a better quarterback than me, you are absolutely out of all of your mind, not just part of it.
Isn't that totally irrelevant? Wouldn't you expect that Aaron Rodgers truly believes he's confident and he believes he's the best quarterback? And truly, if you put truth serum into Tom Brady, he's going to sit there, even though he's taken a roundabout way. Well, it's for other people to judge.
Well,
he's
no going
to say he's the best quarterback. Weren't you the best tight end when you played? Best tight end?
No.
you're an outlier. You're an outlier.
No. I mean, I thought I was. I thought I was.
That's the point I'm making.
Once I looked, I was like,
they both think they're right.
Me.
You know, they, Shannon's right, but he's using that as proof that Aaron Rodgers is better.
Come on.
Because he thinks it, right?
So he should think it. That's the ego. You know, I'm sure Donnie Sadler thought he was a better player than you.
Sure.
Okay?
So it's name again. And here's the other thing. So, and it's not like you can't really blame, you can't even, he didn't have Bill Belichick, right? It's not like Mike McCarthy is Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson is a terrible coach. He has Mike McCarthy. He's won a Super Bowl. He knows what he's doing. You can't use that as a negative. Well, you know, Mike McCarthy's. No, that's not it. Good coach, a great quarterback, great fan base, great home field advantage. He always had receivers. He's always had weapons, running back, receivers, tight end. Never short of a skill. So what's your excuse?
I'm floored. I'm amazed that this thing is popping up once again. Because if anything, Aaron Rodgers has been an underachiever. He should have accomplished more by this time. He's already 35 years old. Come on. Should have accomplished more. Is he a great quarterback? He is. And for one given night, it looks gorgeous. It looks beautiful. It's gorgeous.
What'd you call Brady? Artistic, the way he moves. What was it? There it is. He's artistic. It's like he's creating on the fly.
It's unbelievable.
He's Sidney Pollack.
Come on. All right, we're going to take a break. And then we're expecting Alex Cora will join us live over here at Fenway Park. And then we're going to take some phone calls for Cora as well at the end of the interview.
Explain it.
So you can throw some phone calls out there. We'll explain it when we do it because sometimes people can't remember. Okay. We'll get to it.
You think you don't want to?
I know exactly. Nope, I don't because they'll forget.
We're all very thankful that he won a World Series.
Thank you. We'll remind them again.
You made me cry.
None of that.
Alex, I love you, man. I love you, man.
We just had a baby yesterday. We named it Alex.
My dog's name is AC.
Can I set up a GoFundMe for you? Can I do that? All right, so we'll talk to him, and then we'll get back into this whole debate. And you'll hear from some more of these national guys. It's unbelievable, the stuff that they're saying about these two quarterbacks. We'll do that a little bit later on. Alex Cora joins us.
The Drive Home is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Town Fair Tire sells every name brand at the guaranteed lowest price. And Town Fair offers more free services than any other tire dealer. For the best prices on tires, nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Now back to Ordway, Maloney, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
Think about it. The New York Yankees, the sky was falling. You know, we lost game 2. And he was panicking here. Everybody was like, whoa, it's over. We scored 16 at Yankee Stadium. Suck on it. It was an amazing run. It was an amazing year. And you guys make it that special. Thank you very much. Enjoy.
Can I make a little prediction to everybody? I've been doing this for a little while, and you can figure stuff out. Yankee Stadium chant next summer will not be Boston sucks. It will be suck on it. Yeah. That's what they will be chanting back to these guys.
We give that to you.
Oh, they'll throw it right back in their face. Here he is, the manager of the world champion Red Sox, Alex Cora. Good to see you. This thing was easy, huh? Piece of cake. First year. I mean, you could do this. Just
let's keep doing
asleep,
it. Huh?
Right?
Let's keep doing it.
Yeah. Have you processed it all yet?
Not yet. You don't have time, honestly. Between parades and flying to Puerto Rico on Saturday. We got the Celtics tonight. We got Pedro's event tomorrow. Puerto Rico Saturday. Patriots Sunday. Bruins on Monday.
Jeez.
And then organizational meetings. And let's go. 2019.
Trust me, you have half the appearances Steve Pierce has right now. Okay?
No.
It almost feels like.
And he's making a lot of money, too.
Yeah, it's like this, you know, when these college kids win the Heisman Trophy, they take this, like, victory tour, and they all come back before the combine. They all gain, like, 20 pounds.
Well,
so you're taking all these trips. Everyone wants to feed you. Mind you, eat.
Well, yeah, we got to take care of that. Yeah.
So you knew right from the beginning, I feel like, you were confident in this team in spring training. But what point did you realize that, because, I mean, right now, after the run you guys went on, what you did in the postseason, you're regarded as the greatest Red Sox team of all time. Did you ever think that about this group?
I read it the other day, and I was like, wow, they might be right. We started off so well, you know, it started in spring training. We finished spring training playing fast, clean baseball and pitching well, and you know, we played the Rays and the Marlins and the Rays, and I know a lot of people around town, they were like, oh, they're playing nobodies. But and at the end, one of the nobodies team won 90, so they were a good team. And he felt right away, this is a good group. And we never got caught up on the record. We always keep pushing them to be better. There were a few things that early in the season we didn't do well. Base running was one of them. We were great at stealing bases, but not great about the other stuff, advancing 90 feet or when to advance 90 feet. And the pitching got better, and defense got better. And I felt that if we make it to the tournament, like I said, you know, we knew we were going to make it. Mm-hmm. But avoiding that one-game playoff game, it was huge for us. And then we got the tough matchup right away. I know the Astros – they were great, and Cleveland too. But I was, you know, playing the Yankees in the first series. It's tough because it's only a 5-game series, and we were gonna play them so many times. And there's nothing new, you know. Like there's no like, okay, if we see this, we can exploit it because we play 19 times against them. But we match up well with the rest of the league. That series was a good one for us, and then we took off.
What was the during the regular season? Forget about the postseason. What was the toughest obstacle for you guys to overcome?
I do feel that when they came back and they got the lead, they were at one point 2 games ahead of us. That was around when we made it to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You know, we get to this ridiculous start. Let's put it that way. That was stupid. You know, 17-2, and we were right away 9 games up or 8 games up, and then they went until the run. They went 17-2, and we tied, and we got behind for one moment, and that was probably the toughest part because you're like, man, we wasted this start. But we knew they were going to be good. We knew that they had a complete team, and we knew they were going to make some moves in July that they were going to be better. But that was the toughest moment right there.
So do you express that? Because I know you're not big on like team meetings and stuff like that.
Nah.
So you, are you just internally dealing with that? Or are you expressing that to the rest of the team?
But you had one meeting where even though you were winning, you weren't happy with the way you were playing.
Yeah,
what was that?
That was against Kansas City. Mookie hit the 3 home runs against Duffy. We were down in that game. We ended up winning, but halfway through the game, I said, hey, we're going to meet tonight after the game, and it was one of those that hey, we have this record, but we're not playing great. And for us to make it to the next level, we had to pick it up defensively, offensively, pitching-wise. At that point, we were going to Texas, New York, and Toronto. And in Texas, we did an outstanding job. I think we swept them, but that's when, you know, the whole thing with David came up.
The bullpen, the no bullpen, the carpal tunnel syndrome, New York happened after that. And I just failed to give them a heads up. Hey, we're good, but we can be better. But it's up to you to make it happen, and they did.
All right, let's talk about the playoffs, because we constantly talk about you guys steamrolling through the playoffs. You lost one road game, and that happened to be an 18-inning game where you kind of ran out of bodies. But you keep on referring to what happened in New York. So let me find out what you were thinking at the time. Game one, you got a 5-0 lead. You lead right out of the gate. Sale looks like he's going to be okay for you. Suddenly it's a 5-4 game, and we're all sitting here at the end of that game going, God, they were lucky to win that game. This doesn't look real good. Now, game two, Price gives you only an inning and two-thirds. You lose that game 6-2, and we're all sitting here going, what the hell happened to this team that we've just been watching all season long? Then game three, 16-1. Was that the game where the switch went on? Because from that point on, Alex, totally different team.
Yeah, people look at game two, and David didn't pitch well, but we got into the sixth or seventh inning, it was a 3-2 game.
Yeah.
And then that's how we felt throughout the playoffs. That game, Eduardo, he doesn't cover first. I think that was the game. And then he makes a bad pitch to Gary Sanchez. A fastball down in the zone, and we've been talking about this. We can't go down in the zone with him, and he did. And for whatever the result was, for me personally, I was like, we're fine, you know, we'll be okay. Then I know a lot of people, they look at the lineup for game three, and we had Brock, who was 0-16 against Severino.
Devers was the other.
Devers was like 0-4 whatever. But we felt that matchup-wise with right field right down there and the fastball slider combo, he threw a lot of sliders against the A's. So we felt that matchup wise, we were going to be fine. And they put good at bats after good at bats after good at bats. And that was a great moment for the team. That's when I read afterwards that Xander, he said that, you know, he couldn't believe that people were doubting us after winning 108 games. But that's the nature. Yep. We know where we play. We know that we were going to be judged in October. And that was a great game. That was a great game. We put everything together. Next game, we ended up finishing the job. Sale comes in, and confidence-wise, we were at a high.
You know? So that changed. That confidence of that game.
And it also, because that's such a tough series, you know, a 5-game series. It's like we won the first one, we're feeling good. We lose the second one, it's like, okay, 1-1. We have to win two out of the next three. We go to the Yankee Stadium. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable. The 5-game series, man. Well, obviously the wild card game is the worst one. With that series, the short one is a tough one.
So last year, remember you saying, like, Houston, your plan wasn't to pitch, like, you know, during the playoffs, Morton McCullers out of the gate, right? It just sort of happened. Game one against the Yankees, in comes Rick Porcello in the eighth. So it doesn't seem like it just organically happened throughout the playoffs. It looked like that was the plan. Was that at 4 o'clock when Stephen Wright said he can't go, or that was the plan going in using these rovers and figuring that out?
We were going to use a starter besides Stephen during the playoffs, and they were prepared for it. In that game, it was Porcello and Nate, and then we were going to decide who was going to pitch game three. If you know, you follow us, and I never announced a game three starter until we knew what happened after game two. And what Rick did in that game, that set the tempo. It felt that, you know, confidence-wise, the bullpen, we were going to be able to actually use them earlier during games. Another one in that game, game two, it was Joe Kelly. He won, what, 2-3 innings, I think it was, or 2 1/3. And the stuff was amazing. The breaking ball was great, the changeup. And he was one of the guys that we recognized before the playoffs that I cannot leave 100 in the clubhouse. You know, he has to be part of this equation. Mm-hmm. And he pitched well the last week of the season. He made some adjustments with Dana and CB and Bannister, made some adjustments pitch-wise, usage-wise. And when I saw Joe throwing the ball the way he did, it's like, okay, now we're complete. Now we go.
You know, so for the bullpen, bullpen's getting a lot of I guess disrespect. People weren't believing in them, and you guys showed, like, a, correct me if I'm wrong, like a video
to the bullpen, all the guys in the bullpen, right?
I guess. I didn't.
It was Dana?
Dana did.
Dana did. Yeah. Okay. Were you in there?
No.
Okay. So maybe you can maybe speak for him. I'm just curious to know, after it was over, what was the mood of the room? Like, what was the attitude? What was going on with these guys? Was it anger? Was it quiet? Was it, I heard to show you?
I heard it was quiet while the video was going on. And
so it was video of all of the media, us knocking the bullpen, right?
I think so. I never saw the video. I never saw the video. But I think it was like clips of quotes of people just doubting the bullpen, right, and where they were, how people thought about them. And it was more about them listening to it or watching it, and then kind of like, okay, we better do this, you know, we better show them. That's why yesterday, kind of like, yeah.
Well, no, yeah, because I'm trying to figure, like, I wish you were in there. Who was the guy that stood up and said, you know, screw them, we'll show them? Or did everyone just walk out quietly with their own thoughts?
No, I wasn't there. In our meetings, I usually am part of the position player meeting before the games, you know, when we talk about starters, but you have so many things going on that it's hard to be in every meeting. So Dana and Craig and Banny, probably he was there. So they told me about it. Dana told me about it a few days later, and then he reminded me yesterday. And I guess, you know, they showed the people that they were good. Going into October, I don't know, I said it in September, we'll be fine. Because stuff-wise, our guys, they throw hard, and they have a great secondary pitch. Barnes with the breaking ball. Joe, obviously, with the changeup and the breaking ball. Craig, who was the one that, quote-unquote, struggled throughout, you know, good fastball, good breaking ball. Heater did a good job throwing 97 up in the zone. You know, we abandoned the slider for a while, and he made an adjustment on the rubber. And then, you know, Nate, Chris, David, and Porcello, what they did, that was cool to see.
You never can manage, I would guess, an 18-inning game as you're trying to manage in the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. So you get to the point where you've used eight pitchers. You've got two guys left. You know you've got to keep one of them out there. You bring in Nate Eovaldi. And when you brought him in, what did you expect? How long, in your mind, how long was he going? And would you have ever had to go to Pomerantz, I guess, if it went another inning or two?
Drew was going in the next inning. The very next inning. Actually, he was going to hit for Nate. So he was getting ready.
Because you had nobody else to hit?
Yeah, we have no more. Yeah,
they were done.
We ran out of players.
Seventh inning, I think.
That was in game four.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, you have to go all in. You're down 4-0. You got to burn all your players.
So Pomerantz would have come in to hit.
He was coming to hit and pitch, obviously.
So as you're watching the thing unfold with Eovaldi, and he's going two innings, three innings, four innings. What are you thinking?
Well, the thought process was he got up twice. He was going to be the closer in that game because we use David. And at one point I was like, we can use Craig earlier in this game because we got Nate. We have the lead. We bring him in. So he got up twice. And I told Dana and Ron, I said, well, we're going to lose him for the start tomorrow. We still got Eduardo. We felt, actually, analytic-wise, Eduardo was in the top three starters for us against them because of the fastball changeup combo against those righties and avoiding Bellinger and Peterson and Muncy. Right. So Eduardo was way up there in our list. He gets up twice, and I'm like, we burn him already. He's not going to start tomorrow. So let's go for it here, see how long it goes. Because we felt that we were going to score one run. At one point, we were going to get the lead, and we actually did. Like Ian said, it's like the game was in my hands, and I threw the game away. You know, it's not that we went through Nate for six innings and just begging to win. We had that game won, and Ian is the first one to admit it. So it was a calculated risk, knowing that we still had Drew that could match up with them because of the lefties, and also we knew that Eduardo was a good matchup against them.
So Chris Sale has that moment, I believe it was game four, I think it was, in the middle of that inning after you guys went down 4-0. And I was talking about how unique it is because, as you know, if a pitcher starts popping off, like, man, let's go. This guy's got two pitches. You can, in a tense moment, it's easy for a hitter to turn around and say, oh, you think it's so easy? Why don't you? I mean, I'm sure you might have seen that in time in your career. But that didn't happen, right? Because I'm guessing that he is such a leader. Everyone knows Chris, you know, how he feels about all his teammates. Did you hear that? How special was that when you heard that, your reaction? Did you know you guys were going to go from there?
I was begging for them to to do it after a friggin' mess it up with Eduardo. I lived it last year with Verlander. I think it was game six, whatever. He did the same thing. And for Chris to say something, that guy has to be that moment. And I don't know if that was the reason they got going, but he got their attention. I heard Rafi, actually, he was afraid. He got scared. He's like, what is going on here? But right away, there's some – if you start looking, you know, we got a veteran guy that comes in and pinch hits, and he was there the whole time, Mitch, and he hit the home run. He was – I think at that point, and I said it, it's not that we didn't have energy. I think it had to do with the guy on the mound. Rich Hill was amazing. He was amazing. Fastball, breaking ball, and we actually answered all these questions after this. And then Mitch put that homer, and that was it. When Mitch hit that ball, it was over. It was over, honestly, because no way they were going to stop us. I kept telling them, hey, man, you guys are that good. You just keep picking me up tonight. Pick me up tonight. And they did. That was a cool game.
Was that the I guess the one move that you regret the most out of the whole postseason? If you had one move you could redo that you regret, what would it be?
Yeah, that one. And if you start looking at the inning, Joe was ready and Barnes was ready right away. And Turner comes up with men at first. He actually hit a ground ball over the third base bag, and he's a double. So from that, he put me in a situation that, okay, we walk Machado, we got Bellinger, we're one pitch away to get out of the inning because it's a good matchup for us. And the way he was throwing the ball, that was his best stuff the whole season, except the one in Chicago. That was
the best you've seen in months. I haven't seen that fastball from him in a long time.
But then we don't make the play, and it's a tough one for him. You know, that's the reason I should have taken him off. Like, you know, the way the inning was, you know, we don't make the play, they score one. It wasn't about the matchup because the matchup actually benefits us. You know, Puig, he was bad against lefties, but at the same time, Eduardo hasn't pitched more than one hitter or one out, one inning in a month. And to push him and put him in the spot, that was a tough one to swallow, especially knowing that Barnes was ready.
So I was curious, one thing, just a small little thing here now. Eovaldi gives up the foul ball home run to Muncy. Jock Peterson runs onto the field. You go out to talk to the umpire because it's a long at-bat with Muncy. You're close to hitting a home run. You go out and talk to the umpire, and I'm thinking, okay, there's no 12-man rule. I don't know what the violation is. And then I said, I think he went out there to give Nate a breather because it was a long at-bat. What did you go out to argue?
No, actually, DR, he put his hands in his ear like he wants to challenge it.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like, well, challenge it, you know? But at the same time,
to burn a challenge.
Yeah, to burn a challenge. But that's not actually a challenge because it's a home run.
Yeah.
So the umpires, they decide if they do it. And actually, Ted, he was like, Alex, I don't want to ice your pitcher here, so we're not going to do it. That was a foul ball. That was a clear foul ball. I'm like, okay, cool. You're good.
All right, so I was giving you too much credit, but that's
thank
all
you.
Right. David
He's
Price.
He's a genius.
We talked about David, you know, about last time we talked to you. I thought he deserved the MVP. I mean, he basically showed up for four games. He was insurance for Kimbrel. He was outstanding. He carried that Houston start into both of those outings. You, as a team, seemed extremely, everybody, emotional talking about this guy. He got emotional afterwards. Because I think you guys see a different guy, I think, than a lot of people do see. It must have been a great moment just to see him go out and accomplish what he did.
It was. And throughout the season, he was actually probably one of the best pitchers in the American League in the second half. And then he had that outing against the Yankees. But it's kind of like if you take away the Blue Jays out of Porcello's season, he's a top 10 pitcher. If you take away the Yankees from David's season, he's a top 5 pitcher. But it happens. And we felt that the Houston series, and I told you guys, I'm like, he's a good matchup for them. They really don't like facing David Price. And game two that he pitched here, he was good. It's just one play that we didn't finish, Xander.
Mm-hmm.
Bloop double down the line by George. Yep. And one bad pitch to Marwin. So he went, what, 4 2/3, I think. But then in Houston, he was – when he was warming up in game four, I was looking. I was like, wow, this guy is all in. He's locked in. And we finish the game. He comes in, and I go, you, tomorrow, you got it. This is on the field. Then in the World Series, he pitched well here. And over there, kind of like the same deal. The night before, he threw. It seems like the more he threw, the better he got. And the stuff got that better. He's all about command, but the stuff went up. He was throwing 94, 95. The changeup, I haven't looked at the numbers yet from our analytic team, but it seems like the changeup, it was acting like a split-finger fastball. He was throwing it that hard. The arm action was amazing, and the conviction on the mound.
Well, he could smell it there in that last game.
Even Freeze hits a home run, and it was a great pitch in the outside part of the plate. I think he was predetermined. I'm swinging the first pitch, going the other way. But it wasn't the feeling of like, oh, he doesn't have it. It really didn't matter. It was like, I was, I think it was the sixth inning. Somebody asked me, what are we going to do here? I was like, inside I say, he's going eight. Mm-hmm. He's going eight. If we score a few runs, he's going to go eight because he was that good. He was in control. There was like an it factor in that game. And you could see, you know, he'll get an out, he'll scream. And nothing against the Dodgers, but he was leaving the moment, and it was awesome. It was awesome.
All right, there might have been a few questions that have not been asked here. So we're going to take a few phone calls and let a few of the fans talk to you.
Let's do that.
Okay, let's do that. I wanted to ask you one thing before we took the break, and I know you guys have already said you're going to talk over what you're going to do at the White House, but I want to ask you, were you a little shocked 10 minutes after you've won the World Series? Somebody's asking you the question, Alex, you going to the White House?
Yeah, that was it was, you know, like, let's talk about the players and everything that is going on. Let's not make it about Alex Cora, the manager. It should be. That's why I just.
Well, they're looking at your comments that you made concerning the hurricane and the numbers.
But I was like, yeah, we'll talk about it later. Like, not that's now. Simple. Not now.
It sounded like you were talking about the next day's starter. We'll get together afterwards and we'll discuss.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable that
happened. The night before, that was a cool one.
Well, like, maybe you can get on there and change some stuff. Kanye did.
You used the platform the right way.
When you dropped David Price. When you dropped
David Price. David Price, that one.
The walk-off. I mean, why would anybody ask you? Everybody just assumed that it was Sarah.
Nobody asked. I'm like, okay, by the way, David Price is pitching. I try to go, and they're like, no, is Chris okay? It was like, no, we're good. We got a good plan.
All right, Alex Cora joining us live over here at Fenway Park. We will take your phone calls.
Hold on, sorry.
There's going to be some rules. Directions. I was going to give them when they come back. They might forget.
No, because they're listening now.
Here are the rules. Here are the rules, okay? Everybody's congratulated, Alex. We're all doing it as a group right now. That's true. Congratulations.
Thank you, Alex.
Everybody, he did a wonderful job, a great job. So ask questions as opposed to sitting there and saying, Alex, you're the best, Alex.
I named my dog after you.
Alex is the best. Your dog's named after him.
My kids are named after you. My car. Named after you. All right, so the questions for you, 617-779-7937. That's coming up next with Alex Cora.
Conferencing. Take OMF with you wherever you go. Download the radio.com app. Now back to Ordway, Marloni, and Fourier on WEEI.
OMF coming live from Fenway Park today. We're with the manager of the world champion Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. We thought it'd be nice to let him take some questions from you, the fans that have been around
this
all
is
season
be
long.
An experience.
So again, the rules, as Christian told you, okay? Congratulations, all of us say congratulations.
You're awesome,
Alex,
you're awesome,
you're awesome. You're awesome, awesome. Yeah. Now let's get to the questions. We go to Brock in Middleboro first. Go ahead, Brock.
Brockstar.
All right, how's it going? So obviously the team is a real young, strong core. They've been playing together for a while, so there's cohesion there. But with all the reports of how much J.D. Martinez has helped other batters in the lineup in terms of their approach and things like that. In this short time, has he kind of inadvertently stepped into that David Ortiz 10th player role that everybody in the clubhouse is kind of going to for guidance and leadership here and there?
Yes, I think from the offensive side, he became that guy. And sometimes it sounds like Timmy and Andy, they're not part of this, but it's the other way around. They speak the same language as far as hitting. So sometimes it's a lot easier when a player can relate to the players that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the third voice. And Since spring training, he clicked with Mookie throughout the season. There were a lot of changes and a lot of new swings out there, Jackie and Rafi, and JD was part of it. And we're very proud of him because for him to jump into our role in your first season, that was eye-opening, and he did an amazing job.
All right, here's Dave in Worcester with Alex Cora. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Go ahead. Good.
Yeah, so I got two questions. One, Alex, between 2007 when you won the World Series as a player and winning it as a manager, is there a different feeling with it? And two, how do you make your decisions based on pulling a starting pitcher and bringing in, do you rely on Ron Renneke a lot, or do you rely on an instinct or a gut feeling?
As far as 07 and this one, it's not that I didn't like 07, but I really have won a bat in the World Series, and it was a sack bunt. But I'm proud of that group and enjoyed it, but this one feels a lot better. I mean, you're running the show. You're the manager. You're making decisions, and you're in the spotlight. And the guys did an amazing job just following what we told them to do, and I'm very proud of them. As far as, like, decisions, Ron, Dana, information that we have before games, that helps a lot, but there's certain situations that with the information that is provided and what I see, we make decisions. And, you know, sometimes it works, and sometimes Yasiel Puig hits a home run off of Eduardo Rodriguez.
It's your fault, right? Let's go to Eddie. Eddie is in a car. Next up for Alex Cora. Go ahead, Eddie.
Hey, good afternoon. Alex, David Price did an absolutely fantastic job for most of the season. He was just outstanding in the World Series. When David Price sticks to pitching and he takes care of his business on the field, all of us fans absolutely love him. As a manager, do you wish sometimes that some players maybe wouldn't get into it as much with the media? And you, as a manager, do you have any control over that?
No, I actually let them be. You've been in the big leagues for a while, and you know how to, control the media, but they're going to ask questions, and you feel like that's the way you have to answer it, you answer it. One thing for sure, I'm more worried about him showing up every day, going through his progress and getting ready to pitch. And if there's one guy in that clubhouse that does that perfectly, it's David Price. He not only pays attention to his craft, he pays attention to the other guys, Eduardo, Chris, Rick. This guy's in every bullpen. He's watching video of other guys. He's watching videos of hitters. So I can't complain. The guy this season for me, he was amazing, and I'm very proud of him.
Good question so far.
Yeah, I'm amazed.
Yeah, Thomas in North Providence. Let's see how Tom's question is. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, how you doing, Alex? Quick question.
Good.
You know, do you think that being a professional ball player, going from that to an analyst, ESPN, and working with the Astros as a bench coach, do you think that really is what set you apart this year as far as your success with the team and molding these players and making them come together? Do you think that had a lot to do with it? It's your first year, you know, as a coach.
It has all to do with it, honestly.
Right.
The player experience playing for the managers, I learned a lot from each one of them. ESPN for me to deal with the media and learn, start using information to prepare for 2.5 minutes, you know, to explain people why things happen on the field. You start using numbers and you open up. And then Houston, the way they do things is a lot different than other organizations. And I was lucky enough that my first year as a bench coach, it was with them. Learn a lot from AJ, learn a lot from Jeff and Mr. Crane. Their analytic department is one of the best in the big leagues, and I started seeing information that I never seen it, and start using it to prepare players. And then you come here, and you know they bought into what I talked to them in that suite in New York, and the analytic department was amazing. Dave always talked about having an experienced bench coach to hire one, and Ron Renneke, he was perfect for us. And then the rest is history. You know, the players are very talented. Ownership, obviously, they spend money. We got the highest payroll in the big league. So it was like a perfect storm. And the guys at the end, they did an outstanding job winning the whole thing.
And you're the highest paid manager, right?
No,
we're working on it. So are you enjoying this? This may be the greatest Red Sox team of all time. Lou and I actually think it is. 04 is far more emotional, especially from two Bostonians, because we never saw this before. But this, and the way that it was done, the best ever. You're going to hear that question constantly asked as you're on the banquet circuit in the offseason. What's your take on it?
One thing for sure, I don't know if we're the greatest team in history, but the teams that we beat this postseason, they were pretty good. Somebody asked me yesterday, how was last year? I was like, what was the record last year? We were 11-7, I think it was.
In the postseason.
Yeah. In the postseason, that was a really good team.
Yeah.
The Astros were a really, really good team, and we were 11-7. And this was 11-3. And if you start looking at the games, we were down 3-2 going into the ninth against Houston, and then they had that big inning. They beat us in 18 innings in the World Series. And then the Yankee game that we felt that we were in it.
Yeah.
So we were in every game in the postseason. And we pitch, we play good defense, we run the bases extremely well. And even with, quote-unquote, Mookie and JD not swinging the bat the way they did throughout the season, we dominated. So I don't know if it was we are the greatest, but as far as, like, dominating the playoffs – yeah, we dominated.
So you guys have a bond now, you know, I mean, with what you accomplished. This team was close, and it showed by what they're willing to sacrifice for you, for their teammates, physically, mentally. A week from now, you got to sit down with Dave Dombrowski, and it's going to be some tough decisions. Like, how hard is that to kind of take the emotion out of it, and while Dave's trying to rebuild, or questions about letting guys go, letting guys walk, is that that's got to be difficult this close to it.
Yeah, I mean, but we're not complaining. If we only have 5 or 6 days to talk about 2019, it means that you play all the way to the end. I don't know if you guys notice, I'm not very emotional on the field, in the club, in the dugout. I'm attached to those guys, and in the office, in the hotel, yeah, I care about these guys, but I know that there's a job. We have a job to do, and from now on, is looking forward to 2019. And as you guys know, ownership and the front office here, they do an outstanding job putting this team at least in the talk or talent-wise to make it to the playoffs, and then we'll see what happens.
Is, you know, obviously being an ex-player, bench coach now, managers, I mean, does it make those decisions easier for you to, I guess, push forward to the guys? I don't know how you, I guess, practice to tell somebody, hey, you know, we don't like you anymore, I guess. Yeah. You know,
other way around. The player is like, you know what?
Is there like a script that you have like, hi, you've been great. However, like insert name. Hey,
you're part of the greatest team in history. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
The next guy comes through.
That's part of the learning process. Yeah. This is the first time I'm going to go through this. Last year, I was a bench coach, and when we got the last out, boom, I was the manager of the Red Sox. So it's a new experience, and we got so many experienced people up there in the front office that they're gonna help me out with the script.
I wanted to ask you about Devers, right? Somebody asked me the other day about him, and he has all the tools to me, footwork, arms, hands. But I said early in the year he seemed like an A-ball, double-A defender, maybe making some mental mistakes or decisional mistakes. And you could almost see him go through like the Triple A. It was about repetition for this kid. He's still 21, and by the time you get to the World Series, he looked like the above-average third baseman.
He was outstanding, and
he could hit too.
and he's not afraid of the stage.
No.
I do feel that when he got hurt the second time, and he went on the rehab assignment for 10 days, the game slowed down for him. He was out of the spotlight. No more talk about his defense. No more talk about his offense. And it was just go to AAA and play. He got on the bus, on the buses. You know, he paid his dues, quote unquote, in 10 days. And when he came back, there was no expectations. The whole talk was about Eduardo and Brock. Who's going to play? Who's going to be the third baseman in the playoffs? And all of a sudden, he started putting good at-bats and good at-bats, started hitting the ball out of the ballpark. He stopped chasing pitches up in the zone. And defensively, he slowed it down. Credit to Carlos and Ramon. They did an outstanding job with him. And then throughout the playoffs, I don't think he got caught in the moment, just only once in game three.
Yeah, and, chasing up.
And it had to do with the guy on the mound. And you could see he was back to shaking his head and looking up and saying, oh, my God, you know, like the game sped up on him, and then he slowed down again. And I'm not going to say 280, 30, and 100. Ooh. I'm not going to make that you know.
You just did.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that. Well, but I'm going to say.
The limit. He's 20. Yeah.
I'm going to say that he's going to be a lot better than this year. And at 21, he ended up hitting, what, 20 and 70-something. So I wish I had a, you know, my age 21 season.
You're still 20. Miami.
Yeah.
You are, right?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So you're going to make the tour. You said the Celtics game, the Patriots game. Apparently you've been cleared out of concussion protocol after you got hit with a beer can yesterday in the parade, right? You're okay, your daughter's okay, everybody's
good. We're all good.
You're also going to Puerto Rico with a bunch of the players on Saturday. You're taking the trophy down,
we're taking the trophy down.
Now, how emotional is that going to be?
That's going to be fun. That's going to be fun. For everything I heard, the party starts at noon and we'll finish at 2 a.m. We're not going to be there till 2 a.m.
Oh.
But it's been just watching videos and the feedback and just watching the websites. As you guys know, in our country, they love boxing. They love it. You know, Tito Trinidad, Miguel Cotto. And on a Saturday fight night, everything stops. You know, everybody gets together in their houses, kind of like Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, you watch it, it's over, everybody goes out to the streets, and they party. And I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit this, but I heard that was the whole time during the playoffs. You know, like, it was about the Red Sox and Alex and Christian, and if they win it, it's historic. And I can't wait because it should be a fun night. Yeah. It should be a fun day, not only for me, but for my family. They were here the whole time. I was telling somebody today, the cool thing about the whole playoffs is having your brother, who is an accomplished coach, he's won before, he played in the big leagues, to watch the games just like a fan, there for his brother. That was the coolest thing of October.
Well, the other thing, too, is, as we all know, when you win a championship, I know you addressed it today, it becomes political. When do you discuss going to the White House?
Yeah, we'll talk about it as an organization. And like I said today, I've been using this platform the right way for my country. I've been outspoken, at the same time very respectful about the whole situation. And if we decide as an organization to go, I'll use this platform the right way. And I'm not going to embarrass my country. I'm not going to embarrass myself. I'm not going to embarrass the organization.
Well, it's a great idea. Instead of just making it a photo op, see if you can accomplish something.
Did you?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did you go last year?
No, I was. No, we had a game actually.
Were in spring training.
I was managing the Red Sox. And, right. Yeah, it was.
There you
tough.
Go. Exactly. I knew
tough.
Carlos just didn't go. Yeah. Beltran Correa.
It was not an excuse. Listen, we've enjoyed this. We picked up middle of the season. We didn't screw it up on you.
We struggled a little bit.
We thought we were going to screw it up.
You guys
picked
it up. 4-4, I think. Just in a week, or like. So
we don't have to apologize for anything. You know, matter of fact, Christian has already told you it's all downhill from here. You've already won in your first year. There's nowhere to go. But we really appreciate it, and we've thrown the questions out, and you have not been hesitant at all. You've been very frank and honest in throwing the questions, and we hope you remain the same way next season. We look forward to seeing
you down there
in spring training.
It's going to be fun. The offseason is going to be great, and like I said, we're going to be ready for next year. Spring training.
Okay, I was going to say, spring training.
Okay, we play the Yankees right away. So.
Bring it.
But they're not going to go. The big guys are not going to, especially now. You know?
You'll have no pitchers throwing until mid-March. No, don't worry about
it.
You'll
be like Nunez. You'll be going into the stands. You kidding?
You'll be on the ground the whole
time. You heard the story about that game.
You'll be on the ground the whole time.
What's the story?
So when Barnes tackled him, you know, the wild pitch, Brock actually, great base running play. We have no more players left. We only have Pomeranz. That was it. So I go to the plate, and he's like, "Please, Alex, don't take me out. Please, Alex, don't take me out." In Spanish, I say, "Well, Nooney, I'm not taking you out." He's like, "Oh, okay, thank you." I was like, no, it's because we don't have any more players.
but here's what happens. So that's at the home plate, right? That's at home plate.
What happened?
Then he goes to first.
And same thing.
And like, what the hell is going on? So what are you, because I heard you guys chirping
what
back
was
and
he
forth
laughing
in Spanish.
At?
Well, because he goes the same route. He seems like he forgot in 10 seconds, he forgot that we have no more players. And remember in Houston, I took him out. He hit a single, and he was limping. I took him out right away.
Devers,
and we knew we were going to do it. So at first, he goes like, Alex, please don't take me out. Like, Nooney, I just told you, bro. Like, we have no more players. And he starts laughing.
So he goes in the stands. He goes in the stands.
Cost you a base, too. Put the Muncie down at second.
He can't score from first. Yeah.
And then he trips and he falls on his face. But you know what? I have more agility than he had that night.
Yeah, but you go back to game one. That breakable down and in. Yeah. Boom.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So, yeah. Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
A lot of good memories. Thanks, Alex. Thank you. Alex Cora. Joining us live here at Fenway Park. We take a break, then we'll get to the phone calls at 617-779-7937.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.